Crowned heads, wealth and privilege may well tremble should ever again the black and red unite. Otto von Bismarck, 1872.
When I was just a little thing, I used to love parades with banners, bands, red balloons, and maybe lemonade. When I came home one May Day, my neighbor's father said, "Them marchers is all commies. Tell me, kid, are you a red?" Well, I didn't know just what he meant. My hair back then was brown. Our house was plain red brick like most others in the town. So I went and asked my mama why our neighbor called me red. My mommy took me on her knee and this is what she said. "Well, you ain't done nothing if you ain't been called a red. If you march or agitate a so you might as well ignore it or love the word instead. Cause you ain't been doing nothing if you ain't been called a red."
Greetings, comrades. If you've already given the previous podcast episode a listen, you're probably guessing that some fallout has come my way since then. And indeed, it did. To even call it fallout would be an understatement, actually. My life has been upside down since then, and I'll be taking a brief hiatus to get my personal and professional affairs back in order. That being said, a comrade and friend of the podcast who has been paying attention to all the drama that ensued has kindly offered his services to help keep this podcast fresh and alive. This comrade, who has requested his identity remain anonymous out of caution for his safety and livelihood, is a very special and interesting character, to say the least. He's a husband, a father, an author, a mental health advocate, and resides in the National Capital Region. He also speaks 6 languages, moonlights as an amateur fighter in regular active competition, and also works for the federal government. He's also an anarcho-syndicalist. Yeah, it's a bit complicated. Anyways, he recently approached me with an episode idea where I would read his works on his behalf, as for obvious reasons he's reluctant to speak publicly. Like most anarchists, his best works are done undercover. So without further ado, here's a reading of a short essay written by your friendly neighborhood anarchist. I hope that you will enjoy it, and hope that maybe I can coax him into swinging by in our neighborhood again. Be a lover and a fighter. I'm a short-tempered man, and I have little patience for bullshit. As you would expect, I am not a fan of hackneyed, meaningless cliches. Many of them grind my gears, they're often mindless and repeated ad infinitum by suckers who should otherwise know better. The one I hate the most, however, is this one. I'm a lover, not a fighter. Fuck that. You know who's not a lover? Fascists, cops, your boss, fat and dumb private security guards who protect private property for minimum wage, fare collectors who harass the poor because they're bitter they didn't end up being cops. The assholes who chastise the panhandler in your inner city because he or she is desperate to get a bite to eat or get a hit to ease the pain of addiction. Your racist uncle who would hit a person of color with his car if he knew he could get away with it. Bad Johns who harass sex workers of all stripes of the gender spectrum, pleased as punch they can get away with their abuse with near guaranteed impunity. Even clergy, regardless of religion and denomination, who secretly tap dance at the thought of vulnerable sexual minorities getting beaten and killed in the streets, and don't even get me started on those who prey on kids. Do you think love, of all things, will dissuade these bastards from the evil things that they do? Don't delude yourself. The biggest proponents of nonviolence are the oppressors themselves, the scum of the earth that will always delight in knowing that the vulnerable people they torment will not fight back, either because they're too weak or not brave enough to stand up for themselves or others. Does this sound cruel and cynical? Maybe. But hear me out. Even Lenin and Mao would agree with me. The former said that a revolution cannot be made with white gloves, and the latter said that the revolution is not a dinner party, and that communism is not love, it is a hammer to smash the enemy. You may not like anarchists that much, and that's okay. We don't necessarily agree with the Reds that much either. But if we've been on the same side before and bashed the Fash in Spain, we can do it again together. A bigger tent gives us all the more cover to help each other out and fight a common class enemy. Big tents get shit done. Oh, but I'm not a fighter, you might say. Violence is not your cup of tea. That's fine and dandy like sour candy, but guess what? Your enemy revels in it nonetheless. But lo and behold, they're not as adept at it as you might think, and therein lies your advantage. Allow with me to share with you a personal anecdote from a year ago to exemplify this. On one warm autumn day, I had encountered several crude signs tacked onto telephone poles in downtown Ottawa. In just a 15-minute walk away from the near namesake university and only a 5-minute walk down the street from Parliament Hill. "It's okay to be white," the sign proclaimed, pasted on top of crudely rendered drawings made in the likeness of archetypal Caucasian male students. Fuck that shit, I thought to myself on my way to work. I tore down every poster I saw on that damn street and threw them in the trash where they belonged. I thought little more of this nonsense by the time I got to my office for work and carried on as my per usual workday routine. I drank bad coffee, attended boring meetings, made recommendations that were soon squashed by mealy-mouthed executives with too much time on their hands, and then filled out papers and replied to a bunch of emails. I then went on my lunch break and just a few dozen steps out of the building with my earbuds on as I began to listen to the latest episode of Chapo Trap House on my way to grab a Vietnamese sandwich, I encountered in the flesh the patient zero of my morning problem. A stupid, slovenly, doughy, neck-bearded Proud Boy who was sticking the same fucking posters down Bank Street literally a short walk away from the House of Commons. He even wore the ridiculous outfit that you would imagine, black and yellow Fred Perry t-shirt, goofy-ass shorts, and a dollop of acne and BO to fill the ensemble. So what's an anarchist subversive and deep cover to do in such a situation, you may ask yourself? What about free speech, you may ask as well? If you're a gormless liberal centrist, that is. Well, your friendly neighborhood anarchist put his praxis into gear. I paused the podcast, took off my necktie, and shuffled it into my pocket and gripped my teeth before tearing off every sign he put up in plain view, no less. I wanted him to know that I wouldn't tolerate this bullshit in the downtown core. Not there where it was full of indigenous peoples down on their luck. Not there where sex workers prowled the streets after dark and weren't always seen again for after a few weeks. Not there where people of color went to work, shopped, ate, and generally just lived in the usual benign existence that we're all owed in this life. This gormless douche was trolling on purpose, either by his own volition or on behalf of his higher-ups. If these people won't fight for themselves, then someone else has to do the dirty work. No pazaran. An injury to one is an injury to all. Or, as I said in my own head, not today, dipshit. I followed the Proud Boy down the street and loudly tore each paper he posted until I got his attention. "Hey," he yelled at me when he noticed what I was up to. "What the fuck are you doing?" I kept tearing up the paper in the theatrical fashion and walked towards him angry on the inside, but remaining composed on the outside. He puffed his assumedly sweaty chest and stared at me. I stood face to face and turning glowered with the same look I gave to my opponents in the ring, mat, or cage. "Fuck around and find out," my face likely displayed. He said nothing in turn and made no sudden movements, to his credit, after all. Why pick a fight with some random guy in office clothes in the middle of downtown? Especially if the guy happens to look angry, tough, and not too keen on shitheads posting obvious race-baiting propaganda in full public view. I then promptly switched the stack of papers he had in his hand, tore a few pages in full view, and then dumped the rest in the nearby recycling bin as other passersby walked around us, not wanting to escalate the situation further. The stupid, sweaty Proud Boy did nothing about it. He walked away slowly into nearby Somerset Street and walked back east, probably back to the nearby campus bridge by the Rideau Canal, and said nothing. If I were to follow him, he'd probably either puked in an alley or grabbed his cell to call his mom. At least that's what I hoped in my heart had happened, as a mischievous smile most likely crept to my face and he waddled away down the other side of the street. I then went and tucked my earbuds back into my ears, hit play, ordered my Vietnamese sandwich and coffee, and walked back to my office to straighten out my tie and get back to my stack of paperwork. Just another day at the office for your friendly neighborhood anarchist. So then, what to make of this anecdote? Well, there are some lessons to be learned from this. Mao was onto something when he said that all reactionaries are paper tigers. Did you ever get bullied in your childhood, only to find out later that all this time he, and yeah, most bullies, are insecure males in both childhood and adulthood, got his comeuppance at long last, and then it dawned on you that for all this time, he was little more than a fucking wuss? It doesn't change as you age. The same assholes in the office, store, streets are paper tigers all the same. Their power is in convincing you that you are weaker than you truly are. They are themselves aware of their own weaknesses, and they project that fear onto others in the hopes that you will be convinced otherwise. Think about it for a sec. Most SF stormtroopers were hapless nerds cosplaying in a uniform and harassing children and old ladies. Mussolini's black shirts were glorified soccer hooligans who liked to pretend they were real soldiers. Your average flat floor isn't that different either. Why else would they target sex workers, teenagers, the mentally ill, the homeless, and indigenous people and people of color? They don't target white people and people of money and influence because the consequences outweigh whatever petty benefits they had in mind. Far-right hate groups like Lamut and the Soldiers of Odin? Nothing more than stupid, sweaty boomers trying to look tough and make themselves look big. If they weren't, then why would they only demonstrate on weekends and hide behind rows and rows of faceless riot cops with shields and cudgels? My personal favorite? The Battle of Cable Street. Oswald Mosley was surrounded by police when he marched with his flunkies, but the locals wouldn't let the bastard pass through the neighborhood. He walked away humiliated and defeated. All reactionaries are paper tigers. Paper tigers can be torn to shreds. You just need to see through the facade, bite down on your mouthguard, and push back. Show them you're not having any of their bullshit and watch as the foundation crumbles under the might of your righteous indignation. And yeah, I get it. Maybe you're not 6 feet tall and tipping the scales at over 200 pounds of muscle, and your arms aren't embroidered with skulls and knives and other signs that you're not the one to be messed around with without consequence. That's okay. Neither am I, and neither are most of your class enemies. If I manage to confront a goofy but hateful Proud Boy while wearing office clothes and literally on my way to lunch, then what stops you from intervening when faced with an act of injustice? You're not the fighting type? That's okay. No one says you have to get into the ring or cage like I do, but it's in your interest to start training. Take up judo, Brazilian jiu-jitsu, wrestling, or Thai boxing. Learning to be even remotely proficient in it can save your life should misfortune ever come your way, or worse still, to someone near and dear to you. Learn a combat sport or martial art that can emphasize physical conditioning and live training with resisting opponents. Something that will leave you reasonably sore and bruised. Though I can personally attest that it takes a lot of training to beat someone at the amateur or professional level. It takes very little to be able to get the better of someone who is untrained. Train with a coach who looks tough enough to kick the crap out of you. Don't get fooled into training under some charlatan with a mullet who claims to teach so-called deadly techniques. They're class traitors in their own ways and are not to be trusted. You're not particularly the athletic type? Take heart. This can be fixed. Lift weights and be strong. Train hard enough that you can squat, deadlift, and bench press your own body weight. This will help you better gauge whether you can handle a person of your size in a violent situation.
Eat plenty of protein to fuel your body and help it recover. Walk with an air of confidence in your stride and speak assertively when meeting strangers. Make eye contact, even if you're an introvert like I am at times. At the very least, looking strong and fit is a deterrent in itself. Predators always look for an easy target. If you look like someone who will make it hard for them to hurt you, chances are they'll move on. Even better, join a club that has like-minded individuals. Get involved with civil society, as Clara Zetkin and Timothy Snyder mentioned in their respective works against fascism. Your teammates or club acquaintances may come in handy someday. If they happen to be closet reactionaries, take it as an opportunity to radicalize them. I myself train with more than a few cops and soldiers, and I've managed to reach a couple of them. Even if they happen to be closet reactionaries, take it as an opportunity to radicalize them. I myself train with more than a few cops and soldiers, and I've managed to reach a couple of them so far with ideas of class consciousness without leading them to communist and anarchist concepts. Even if I didn't succeed at it, it's still not a wasted endeavor. There is value in keeping your class enemies closer than your friends. Know their strategies and tactics. Adjust your own counterattacks accordingly. Get informed on what you're legally allowed to carry in public. For instance, most Canadian provinces, to my understanding, allow small pocket knives in public places. You can buy them in most department stores legally, and they tend to cost very little. Learn to flick them open and close them at a second's notice. Failing that, get yourself a cane or walking stick. If you walk around in public spaces that make you feel uncomfortable, carry a hot cup of coffee or tea to use as an improvised weapon. Hell, even a simple retractable pen can be a pretty badass weapon if you're hell-bent on carving up someone's face to save yourself. More importantly, get accustomed to pain and discomfort. Civilize your mind, but let your body loose. Be comfortable with violence in both theory and practice. Get your ass beaten up on the mats and dust yourself off. Don't take it too personally. Instead, treat it as if it were a fire drill. You're not dead yet, and there's still time to get your ass into gear. Nonviolent resistance? That's a sham from the oppressor. Peace is always the best option, but only if you're capable of war. Fascists don't give a shit about your peaceful ideas if they know you won't push back the boot that's crushing your neck. Am I advocating violence, war, and mayhem? No, but it's not a bad idea to plan ahead for disaster. After all, if you're truly a lover like you say you are, how can you truly be one if you're not willing to fight for those you love? If you can't defend those who can't defend themselves, then what the fucking good are you in struggle for justice? Anarchist, communist, anti-fascist, or just plain old hater of injustice. Be strong, be brave, and don't let those bastards grind you down. Good luck and good fortune to you, dear comrade. If you're a person of color, a sexual minority, or a member of any other marginalized group, I wish you even more success, and I implore you to please get to work on it immediately. Your struggle will be even greater than mine. Time and privilege are not on your side. Be it in the cage, in the office, or on the streets, may you always do the right thing when the time comes to act. Make fascists afraid again. I remain, as always, your friendly neighborhood anarchist. So there you have it, comrades. I hope this reading from my anarchist friend has been an enlightening one. It certainly has for me. I've been training my body hard and have made some dietary changes in the near year, and intend on making my own physical well-being a top priority as well. Meeting a bare threshold of physical fitness is, after all, a social responsibility on behalf of not only yourself, but your fellow comrades as well. If you like my friend's dissertation and would like to invite him again to share his thoughts, please comment on this podcast installment to let us know. I'm sure we can have him join us again with a bit of coaxing. Until then, revolution always, and solidarity forever.
When I was growing up, had my troubles, I suppose, when someone took exception to my face or to my clothes, or tried to cheat me on a job or hit me on the head. When I organized a fight back, why the stinkers called me red. but you ain't done nothing if you ain't been called a red. If you marched or agitated, then you're bound to hear it said. So you might as well ignore it or love the words instead, 'cause you ain't been doing nothing if you ain't been called.